Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Tuesday Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen. Dennis Dick with you this morning. Mostly flat markets, a lot of smaller individual headlines to discuss. We got headlines on Big Lots, McCormick, Abbott Labs, Google, Fitbit, Sogo, Micron has earnings after the close. That's pretty much it for the earnings front today. Two guests on our radar. First up at 8:35, we'll be joined by Bill Baruch from Blue Line Futures. And then at 9, we've got Andrew Left from Citron Research. We're going to talk his shorts and his longs, hopefully, at 9. So a big show on the guest front. Let's bring Joel on here. Joel, I hope you had a nice, easy fast. I hope you're feeling refreshed and full and are prepared to tell us about what's going on here in this market.
Yeah, off to a great start here for the post-New Year. The market's not cooperating that much, down 6.5 handles at 33.39 and a quarter. You have crude in the red by 32 cents at 40.28. Gold trying to get back above 1900. That's up 670 at 1888.90. Silver in the green by 37 cents at 23.97.5. And Bitcoin in the red by $120 at 10,840. Good morning, Triple D, and nice little rally yesterday. Not looking like a two-day move here. I guess it was a two-day move because we had a rally on Thursday and or Friday and Monday. But what ails the market this morning?
Just a little profit taking, I think. I mean, this is buy the dip and sell the rip, a little rip selling here overnight. We got a little bit too excited, maybe even on the S&P futures overnight, because we were up another 20 handles. And then they pulled the rug out from under them. So we're leaking here a little bit. Obviously, still lots of unknowns. So we kind of get back to this middle ground. So, you know, obviously, we're up at 360. We had the 2-week fall. We put in the nice support at the 320, which was the area we broke out from back in July. So we come back up. You talk about a 50% retracement of maybe the whole move. So 358 minus 320 gives you 38 points. You tack on half of that, which is 19, brings you to the 338, 339 area. That's where you would think you'd come into natural resistance at the 50%. So Technical Tuesday, we're going to call this here today. We're going to use lots of technicals. The market has been trading very technically. Sometimes you have technical markets. Sometimes you have fundamental markets. Sometimes you have markets that just drive on just nothing at all. But in this market, it has been trading pretty much textbook technical here. What are your thoughts here, overall market?
And then
end
of quarter.
Jump into stocks.
End of quarter. End of quarter.
Joe's going to take it away from the technicals and bring it to the end of the quarter. We've got one more day, 29th. So end of the quarter is actually tomorrow, unless
Correct.
They decided to cancel September 30th off the calendar. I don't think they did. So we're coming into the end of the quarter. Do they jack them tomorrow for the end of the quarter?
I think
we're back it up to the 50%.
Yeah. It's funny you calculated that because that was,
math.
Yeah. I was catching up on the numbers that comes in at 87 and a quarter in the S&Ps. So that coincides nicely with those numbers that you came up with. I think we're just range bound, hostage to headlines come out regarding the election. I think, you know, the old stimulus trick plan is in the book. So it's really hard to put the mega short on, because when that news comes out, you know it's coming out before the election, and there's going to be a big pop on that. So market, I think, is just going to be in a trading range and subject to headlines until you guys probably don't want to hear this, but for the next month and a half until this election is over,
yeah.
I think it's going to be choppy range-bound trading. There's very little chance that we go back up and make a new all-time high, and from what the looks of it, the way they bought the dip last week, I don't think we're going to slide to 3,000. I think you got to put your trading range hat on here for the next 5-6 weeks.
Well, you're the third person on the show in the last 2 days that have said that. You missed the show yesterday, obviously, for the Jewish holiday, but we had Christian Frommhertz on the show. He said exactly what you were saying, basically looking, you know, at a trading range, choppy trade. I said the exact same thing and agreed with Christian. And it sounds like you, under your own analysis, say the same thing as well. So I completely agree. I don't think we're going to blast off. I don't think we're going to tank. And I think we're going to chop around. So I think the fade trade is the play here for the next month and a half as well. You get these ripping rallies of 5-6%, you're selling. You get these sell-offs of 5-6%, you're buying. Unless we get some fundamental or macro information coming forward, this market is going to kind of just be in chop fest as the bears and the bulls square off ahead of the election. Tonight we get the debate. So that's always interesting because, you know, I firmly believe the market wants to see Trump. I think they're scared of the unknown of a Biden. We know Trump supports the market. The market knows what it gets. So if Trump performs well against Biden tonight, I would expect the market to maybe like that. But this market has been one that, you know, what you think is going to happen, sometimes it does the exact opposite. But any thoughts, not to get political, but any thoughts on tonight's debate? It is tonight, right? I've got my date right. Right, Spencer?
It is tonight. Unfortunately, it starts at 9 p.m. Eastern. So they're scheming against you, Dennis.
No, I know. I would like to actually be trading on what they say. So
not going
to
happen.
The futures. Maybe I'll trade the futures on what they say.
Here's what you do. You open an account at TD Ameritrade and you trade 24 hours a day. That's what you do.
yeah, unfortunately, the stock is mainly just ETFs, though. So they're true. Obviously, you know how they do that, right? Do you know how they manage the risk on that, the market makers?
Yeah, they sell the flow to virtue.
No, yeah, but the market makers who are providing a market are just doing it outside the S&P range. So you take the fair value and, okay, I'll make a market on SPY. Imagine, you know, you got the S&P futures. Obviously, you've got the E-mini trading all night.
Right.
So you got a quarter point. So I'll make a 10-cent market or 15 or 20-cent market on SPY and then just collect the difference. So, I mean, that's what HFT does. That's what all high-frequency trading. The majority of it is just market making and leaning on other orders. So they'll lean on the S&P futures, like E-mini quote all night, and give you a market on the S&P. I'd do it too. I'll buy five from you 30 cents down below where the E-mini is trading, and I'll short the E-mini against it and make the 30 cents.
Automatic. I mean, automatic trading, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's all done. It's all done by the bots, obviously. That's all. The majority of your flow, you know, like people wanted us to talk about algos, had a couple requests. I mean, all of your market making, you look at the markets move around on SPY right now. It's not humans sitting there moving 70, 71, 67, 70. All they're doing is surrounding where the E-mini is trading. So the E-minis, they're giving you the 3-4 cent market against the E-mini. You know, you can use the stocks, and I use the stocks to a certain extent to do the same type of stuff. But, you know, the pure play is you've got the E-mini, and you've got other S&P vehicles that you can trade against too. VOO is another one. It'll be doing the same thing. You see how you got the tidy 5-cent market? All that stuff is doing is tracking where the S&P futures are. So, and obviously, you know, they arbitrage off that. So if you hit the bid of 53, they're going to make a penny on you or two. So that's what, you know, the majority of high frequency trading is. Obviously, we've talked, you know, other stuff, you know, there can be some nefarious activities, but for the most part, it's just electronic market making.
For whatever it's worth, going back to the election and the debate, Goldman was out with an analysis this morning.
Oh, saying, we like that.
Saying that a Biden presidency would more or less be the same for markets as a Trump presidency.
They
don't see a material difference either way. Are you going to make me go track it down what they said? Okay, hold on.
Yes.
I probably should have done that before I brought it up.
You knew I would ask why. Because they're conflicting directly with what I'm saying.
Hold on,
I
think the
market doesn't want Biden.
I'm gonna track it down. It may take me a minute.
Maybe this market just doesn't care at all, though. Maybe this market's just going up to Dow 100,000 no matter what, and the bulls, and there's no other place to go. And, you know, we got 1% interest rates for the rest of our lives, and there's just no place to go, so why not just buy stocks? Okay, maybe the market just goes up forever and it doesn't care. Is that their analysis?
I'm quoting Goldman via a tweet from Carl Quintanilla from CNBC. Our analysis suggests that the combined effects this is Goldman Sachs on Joe Biden. Our analysis suggests that the combined effects of higher corporate tax rates, more fiscal spending, and lower tariffs would likely result in a similar level of medium-term S&P 500 profits as our baseline forecast that assumes no major policy changes. So a Biden is pretty much equal to no changes. in terms of S&P 500 profits. That's what Goldman's saying this morning. So they're saying it doesn't really matter.
Fundamentally, it's likely correct. I mean, let's just think about the number one thing that drives, obviously, stocks and drives the economy is interest rates. And I was talking with a banker yesterday, and where do you think rates are going? Does anybody think we're going back to 5, 6, 7, 8%? No. How? The whole world is built on debt. So there's no way you can raise interest rates, start jacking off. I mean, they could lose control. Obviously, you know, they're only controlling short-term borrowing rates there to a certain extent. So you could lose control of the long end. But for the most part, how? Why are interest rates, why are they going to just let them blast off and start raising rates? Why would the Fed start raising rates aggressively? I mean, you have so many people that are committed, you know, and have borrowed probably beyond their means if interest rates ever got back up to 5, 6, 7%. The world is built on debt. It's not just the U.S. It's the whole entire world. You know, they went negative interest rates over in Europe. Japan's had low to negative interest rates here. I don't know if they're actually negative, but they're like zero over there as well. I mean, there's just no way interest rates can go back to 5, 6, 7, 8, 10% because everybody lose their homes. So I think low interest rates are here forever, or maybe you should never say forever, but for the long-term foreseeable future. And that probably means corporate profits still, obviously. And that's not a good story for the banks either, but that's a side story. So anyways, I somewhat agree with that analysis, but I do believe that there is a risk that the markets won't see it the same way.
I agree with both your points to what Joel said today and what you said yesterday, or actually what I said it yesterday too. Bottom line is you've got debates, you've got talks about more stimulus packages. That none of that really matters until we get this election thing figured out. So pretty much until we get a declared winner, I don't know if that'll be on election day or not, but once we have a declared winner, I think we're good. But until then, range bound, like you said, guys, sell the rip, buy the dip,
trade. Seems to work
that way. Seems to work
again and again.
Yep. That's not to say that there won't be stocks that trade up a lot and trade down a lot, because we have that every day. We have it today too. But by and large, the big caps, you know, your indices are going to be in this, we think at least, in this sort of range bound trend here for the next month and a half. But as far as movers today, you've got some.
Yeah.
We've got tickers like SOHU, which is going private. SOHU and SOGO, those are the same company. Going private there. We've got Big Lots with some guidance. We've got some news. We have some individual movers. I guess I'll just go to the big one on a percentage basis is the SOHU, SOGU.
So what's happening here?
SOGO.
Both ADRs in China.
Yep. And if you look on the chart, you see that tremendous rally / gap up from July. That was news of an offer, a takeover offer from Tencent.
Okay.
That offer is that's happening now. So SOGO was entered into an agreement to go private. They're going to be owned now by a subsidiary of Tencent. So SOHU, SOGO going off the board here this morning.
SOHU is going off the board as well, and they're not the same stock. They trade very differently, actually.
Well, they're the same. Because one is a subsidiary of the other. So.
Oh, okay. So it's a sub of it.
Right.
So in any regard here, SOHU is getting a nice lift. SOGO is up barely nothing. But if you look at the chart, I guess they kind of already knew about this because SOGO has been going nowhere for the last 2 months.
Right.
It's just been hanging out at 867. So I guess we knew this offer was on the table.
Yep.
And it's confirmed up here this morning. So that's why the stock's up slightly. SOHU getting a nice lift here, up 70% this morning. I don't follow this company close enough to tell you anything about an arbitrage relationship. I've never traded SOGO with SOHU. I mean, I traded China stocks with China stocks, but I don't know the fundamental relationships here. I don't even know what SOHU does. So do we know what exactly SOHU and SOGO do?
Yeah, all these Chinese stocks companies, they all pretty much do the same thing, and that's social media / e-commerce. That's pretty much and like video, like online video. That it's basically one of those three. If you see, you know, a high flying Chinese stock, it's one of four things. It's electric vehicles, it's online video, it's social media, or it's e-commerce. That's pretty much all they've got. So it's one of those four buckets. And in this case, it's a search engine or online
Joel, do you got Sogo? We can forget about it. Looks like
I think we've already spent
technicals
too much.
On these are pretty tough.
Yeah. Okay. I think we spent too much.
It is technical Tuesday, but that's a tough technical story when you got, you know, take private offers and, you know, subsidiaries and a lot going on.
Someone's throwing GRNQ in the chat, and I don't know if it's a low price stock.
We're really going to tough stocks today. I might have to take control from you guys. You guys are going some weird stocks.
All right, here's you're the one who brought up Sohu and Sohu.
I didn't bring that up.
I brought it up. All right, here's a Westward one, McCormick. That's one that we.
There you go. Now, we're talking.
Oh, you're in your wheelhouse.
Bring it back to my wheelhouse.
We've all heard of this. They had earnings this morning. They weren't great. They gave guidance that wasn't great, and they announced a 2-for-1 stock split. That means that its stock should go to like 300, right?
That's what they thought. I mean, here's the board, and obviously, just we're joking here to a certain extent, but they're probably looking. It's like, well, these earnings aren't that great. Well, what can we do to keep our stock afloat? Let's announce a stock split. That works. That worked well for everybody except NEE. So, okay, let's do it. Well, it didn't work. So, at first, it's a spice company. Second, it's not that exciting. And third, it's only a 2-for-1. They like the 4-for-1s or 5-for-1s. Anyway, stock does beat. Guidance, not great. The options people who were on fast money last night were dead wrong on this because they were pumping it, saying there was a whole bunch of call buyers and this thing was going to go to the moon. And it went up 7 points last night because they said it was going to go up. And that was just a gift to anybody who shorted it. And now it is actually giving back those 7 points plus another 6. So it's down 13 points from where fast money pumped the tires last night. So MKC getting hit here. You do have support down here. It is going to actually be on Mad Money tonight as well. Look at me with the scoop on what's going to be on Mad Money tonight, but they said it on CNBC last night, so that's where I got it. So MKC CEO will be on Mad Money tonight, and we know Kramer likes the stock as well. I think you get down here 185, I think you find buyers, so I don't think this thing gets banked.
You got the pop to 202, then the quick drop to 184.
Well, the 202 pop was off fast money last night.
Sure.
So okay. That's when they pumped the tires. And it wasn't the quick pop, Joel. It stayed up there the entire night.
I see it.
200
see
and 202. So you can see, you know, we could just write, if you could write on your chart, you can see, here's, you know, the run-up when fast money says, there's call buyers in here. And here's, you know, where it trades the entire after-hour session because people think, I got to own this thing because fast money just said there's call buyers. So it's got to go up, right? Wrong. When this call buyers is also call sellers, remember too, just because you have a buyer, options are a binary bet. So whenever you have a call buyer, you also have somebody on the other side of that selling the call. So you can say, call buyers outnumbered, you know, active. But, you know, regardless, it's still a binary bet. So somebody sold those calls to that other person who was buying those calls. So you can highlight it however way you want, but there's always two people on every side of the trade. So anyways, we know what I think about call buying.
And also
an option buying.
You forgot another possible scenario. What if they were short calls?
Well, somebody sold the calls, Joel. Somebody bought calls. This is kind of my pet peeve with this inside options activity. Oh, we see call buyers, you know, like crazy in this thing. Well, somebody sold the calls, didn't they? I don't know. Does that just work? Can you just buy calls and nobody sells them to you? How would that work?
The only
Does anybody never bring up this point that when you have a call buyer, you probably have a call seller on the other side of it?
That is, you're putting.
Sorry
you're putting
to damp. You know,
the whole industry.
Everybody loves to say, "Oh, we have huge call buyers in stocks." I'm going to tell you from my experience. I see no edge in that, zero edge in that. And if they want to run it up $7 ahead of that, that's the opportunity to short it. I didn't have the guts to take it. My other buddy at Bright said, I'll short that. And he took it short through the report because it was up $6 and they figures I'm getting a 6-point lead and he's getting rewarded this morning. I should have did the same thing. I actually was trying at the 202 and I didn't get it. And then I was greedy and then I forgot about it. So I was trying to short it up there. But I mean, this is, you know, people want to sell this strategy that, we see option buyers or we see, I don't believe in it. And if it works for you, I know the Nigerians have done a great job with it. And we love Pete and John Nigerian. So, you know, they've got their own strategies. It seems to work for them. They've made a lot of money over the years. So I'm not just going to, you know, poo-poo it all together. I'm just going to say it's never worked for me. And I've never found an edge there. But I do see an edge when somebody props it up on fast money and it runs up $7 because somebody, you know, thinks that the call buyer knows something, you know, and it's going to end up beating. The edge was to short it last night on that. And exactly. That was 200, 202, $7 ahead of the report. You're buying a stock up $7 ahead of the report because somebody said somebody bought some calls. You're probably on the wrong side of the trade. And these people were definitely on the wrong side of the trade, and they're getting punished for it this morning, deservedly so.
And I think a more relevant thing that they never talk about, like the following day, is how did it affect the open interest, right? Because that means if new positions are coming on, that's something that, you know, we talk about on the pinnings. And then
that's the pins are where I like to look at the options. I think, Joel, nail on head. You know, and if you want to explain the pinning, you can. We've explained it multiple times on the show. That's where you can extract.
Go ahead. You do a great job.
That's where you can extract tradable information off the equities by looking at where the big open interest is. Who is the gentleman that we had on 2 months ago or a month and a half ago that was talking about the Amazon report, and he nailed it spot on by looking at the big strikes? Who was that, Spencer, Joel? You know who I'm talking about. Our buddy, Sabathia.
No.
CC.
Yeah, CC. There wasn't CC Sabathia.
I know.
He was on 2 months ago.
CC Wagator.
I call him CC Sabathia. But you know what?
Wagator.
That he is spot on. Everything he said, I was like, this is the guy. This guy knows how to trade stocks off options. And you know what? We bring CC back on because he was kicking ass and taking names that day. And I swore just for you there, Joel, because I know we're not supposed to swear. But he was. And he spot on called the Amazon, said it was going to stop out potentially if you're following the options at 3,200 on the earnings report. And it works. You look at where those big open strikes are. And you say, okay, lots of open interest here at this strike. It's probably where it's going to stall out. Lots of open interest down this way if it starts to tank.
Explain that.
Throw up the option contracts and get a nice big, you know, get them all up there for the close ones. You can even go farther out on Amazon. You might have to go farther out and then figure out where the big open interest is. You'll see, like, you know, we got a 500 contracts here, 500 contracts here, 1,000 contracts. Then you got 10,000 contracts at one strike. That's a bogey. So, because why? Because once it starts going above that, those call buyers start making money. And those call buyers become natural sellers of the stock above that price. And that's what stops it from going up. It isn't that, you know, there's market makers are trying to screw everyone. It's that those call buyers, no, they can now short stock against and lock in profits. And that short pressure will naturally put pressure on the stock. And that's what we call the pin. And if you come and obviously, you know, on the option expiration on the third Friday, when you've got everything, you know, all the options expiring, you always look at where the big open interest is, and it will naturally pin to the price because as you come down, you know, if you were short the stock, you can cover it in to bring it up. So if you're along the calls at, like, say $25, stock goes up to $25.50, you can short the stock against your call for 50 cents to make money. That short sales bring the stock price down towards the 25, the natural action of it. If it comes back down, the people who just short it can now buy the stock back and push it back up. So what it does is as it gets closer and closer to expiration, it naturally gravitates towards the big open interest of that strike. That's how it works.
Because open interest is where the contract, where the contracts are. So you're saying it's basically the open interest shows
if
you.
If there's some big ones.
Right.
If they're all small, it's a non-event. You know, but if there's some big open interest at a strike, like you line them all up and you see one that's like 10 times bigger, that's a bogey.
Right.
And so it's a good idea if you're even trading the equities. I always kind of take a look at the open interest. I don't even trade options, but I take a look at that. And it gives me an idea for where the stock can go. And, you know, we talk about the straddle. We talk about, I didn't look on MKC. I just know when you're buying MKC up $7, you're probably giving up the entire edge. And if you're short net, you're getting that entire 7-point edge because it's a binary event. Are they going to beat or are they going to lose? You think this call buyer knows something? They might, but in all likelihood, they don't. So I'm betting that they don't know anything. And I'm going to extract the 7 points of alpha from the pop-up last night that somebody thinks they know something. I don't think they know anything.
Just another good example too, and it wasn't on an option expiration, but you know, Nike had that big blowout earnings report, right? And you know, it looked like it was a moonshot, you know, 135, 140. And I think it was Chris Brown or somebody mentioned in the chat, and he said, hey, what about all the call buyers? You know, the previous day it settled at 115, right? Mm-hmm. If you took a shot on any of those weekly options, and it wasn't on a Friday or anything, what more could you ask for than, you know, that kind of pop? I mean, I'm not sure what the straddle was on that day, but it does. I mean, they do affect, you know, stock price sometimes more than others, but a great illustration there of what, hey, you know, I have these calls. I bought the 120s. I paid $1.30 for them. Thing opens up at 130. They're worth $10. I got to get rid of them. I mean, so you'd either be natural sellers of the options or natural sellers of the stock. S&P is just kind of chopping around here. We did dip under 3340, trying to get back here, down 475. I think a little bit of a choppy session so far. I hope that's not for the remainder of the day.
All right, just one last thing on the earnings front. We had McCormick, a light day, but we have Micron after the close today. That's probably the only major earnings report on my radar, I think, for the rest of the week. But MU here, quiet in the pre-market session, not really doing anything at all. But
I don't know what to say about Micron. It's been just hanging out at 50 for a long time. You know, back a year ago, we were at 50. We've obviously chopped around. It's basically the ultimate fade stock. It pops up $4 or $5, you sell it. It drops $4 or $5, you buy it. I think it's a binary event, and who the hell knows what they're going to say.
Why'd we pop on September 14th? Was that a price target change? Or
I think it was an upgrade. I think it was.
Really?
I think so.
And let's find.
I think it was a big upgrade. I remember them being in the gutter. I remember...
It was
an upgrade. It was there.
Goldman Sachs saying buy, there you buy. Go. $58 price target is what they said.
That was GS.
Wow, that yeah. was a move.
We and, talk analyst, yeah. Joel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would say it's all about just holding that the bottom into the gap. On that day, you had a low at 48.30. You've come down a few other times: 47.89, 47.78. Yesterday, 48.13. I think. 48. I mean, that's as clear in the line sand as you can get. It holds 48. The stock is still on an uptrend. Maybe test 52 below 48. Boom. I look for a gap fill, but not immediately down to 46.48. But just, I mean, it's got to hold that level, and it's kind of pressing towards near the bottom of it. So keep an eye on 48 if you're trading Micron Technology. But you're right. It's been in a range here. It did bounce. In what month? What is that? 40 to 55 has been the trading range here. You're kind of near the upper part of the trading range.
All right, 8:29. We've got Bill Baruch from Blue Line Futures.
Let's just pound out some tickers. Let's do early ticker time.
Let's do. Well, I got a few more I want to get to. Polaris, PII, light volume here in the pre-market, but it is trading higher. The headline from them is they've announced a 10-year partnership to co-develop off-road electric vehicles.
Oh,
there you go.
This headline. Okay, I want to give you go, Joel. I'll let you go first. I have a lot of thoughts on this. A lot of thoughts.
I just would hate to be out on a snowmobile in the middle of nowhere and
Dies?
Battery yeah. dies.
Well, it's motorcycles, but yeah, I guess yeah, everything. They could probably battery operate those snowmobiles too.
I mean, if you're searching for a sexy way to get your stock up. You know, go and why not? So, I'm not surprised at all. It got a pop. I'll just give you the pre-market high, which you may not see again. That's 95.60. You've backed off there. Major resistance at 96. Go ahead with your thoughts on this one, Dennis.
Okay. So, thoughts one, this headline's flying under the radar. I have no position. I actually had an overnight position, and then I actually already got out of it. Just lucky to have it. It was just coincidental. So I sold it up there near those highs you just talked about. I'm looking to rebuy this because I think this headline's flying under the radar, one. I think it could get some media coverage. And you know what else? This is going to be on Mad Money tonight. And how I know that is Dominic Chu said it last night. So PII is going to be on Mad Money. And if Cramer's going to talk about this stock, he's probably going to talk about this motorcycle deal. So I think the stock has the potential to have a run today. I don't want to pay up $4 for it, which is why I actually sold some of it. I said like up there. But if you can get this thing on the cheap after the open in the 93 or low 94s, I think it has the potential to run up to 98 or more today. Just because, and obviously overall market matters. If the market tanks, it's going to tank too. But I think this could get some love from Mad Money tonight. And you start talking in these, you know, motorcycles and EVs and stuff. It's a little, it's kind of sexy. So I wouldn't be surprised there's a lot of, get some retail love from that too. So it is supposed to be, according to, I believe it was Dominic Chu last night, that this is supposed to be on Mad Money. So I'm looking at a short-term day trade here, maybe trying to buy it at the open if it doesn't open too high.
Okay, good. A man with a plan.
Giving you a setup here. Yeah. And I obviously we usually Jim comes on and says what's going to be on around 10 a.m., but they said it last night. So there was three stocks they said last night. Whether that's true or not, you know, I would hope it's true because they said last night on CNBC. It's THO, PII, and MKC. Full disclosure, I am long THO for the simple reason that that's going to be on Mad Money tonight.
Yeah, I just want to give you those highs if you do get back up to that area again. You had a 97.36 on September 8th. Not quite as high as 96.66 and then 96.74. So let's just call that 97, that whole area. Less than $3 away from that now. So interesting insight on that one.
Well, Dennis, you don't believe in the long-term future of RVs? This isn't a fundamental call? This
is just no fundamental call. I like RVs. I actually was talking about buying one. I think it's cool. I have a buddy that rented one, and I was like going to this. I was like, this thing's awesome. So I'm not nothing against RVs. And actually, it's pulled back here. But this is just short-term day trade. This is called, you know, the ahead of the event being that these CEOs are going to be on Mad Money tonight, and they often run up ahead of that. So we'll see. We'll see if it works. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
What about Winnebago? How's old Winnebago doing?
What's that look like? They've all sold off. You know what? I could get talked into buying the dip on some of these longer term. The Winnebago story. I don't think that story's going away. Do you, Joel?
No.
I don't think gas prices are flying high. Maybe they got to come out. You know what Winnebago should come out with? Is an EV Winnebago. Shouldn't they? Wouldn't that be good? Battery operated, lithium powered.
Yep. I'm sure.
What are they
so
doing? Oh, maybe we should give them that. Winnebago, if you're listening, come out with that and stock would just rip higher.
Well, so they don't even need to produce it. They just need to
mention it.
Yeah.
Stock would be like, whoa, electric Winnebagos. Awesome. Next.
Maybe we'll start. All right.
Pickers.
Let's do tangent. One more. Big Lots gave some prelim guidance this morning, or earnings, Q3 earnings per share. They gave a range of 50 cents to 70 cents versus a 21 cent estimate. So
holy.
Good prelim Q3 earnings per share, stock up 8%.
It's Big Lots stock, man. I've had this one wrong for a while. I've given it hate, and I should have been giving it love. I mean, good numbers. People are shopping at Big Lots. Holy, this got down to $10 whenever we thought everything was going to zero. And it wasn't. It's back at 50. That's the only downside here is it's back to where it was in 2015, 16, 17, 18. Maybe it's got the catalyst to eventually run to 60. We like buying stocks when they're announcing good earnings. I just don't like buying them up $3. So now that it's saying some good earnings, maybe it gets forgotten. It gets back down to the 48 area, 49 yep. area. Maybe it gets interesting. I don't like chasing. I don't like buying stocks up 7%.
41.85 or 51.85. You got to just earlier. What do you have on the dailies to mention here? On the dailies, 51.64 was your high on August 31st, and that was a pretty good sell-off from that area. But I'll agree with you on this scenario. Maybe not trading it today. Let everyone get excited, pumping up 51.5, 52. Then it kind of rolls over, maybe fills the gap 48, 49. And then they announce and they rally again on the same news. How many times have we seen that?
That does happen. This market doesn't price anything in. This is the market that just doesn't even know how to price stocks. Like, you know, like we've said, you know, with the FedEx, everybody knows FedEx is going to kill it. What's it do? Rise another $20 of the good earnings. I mean, it is a market that just doesn't price stuff in. It's been actually unbelievable. So all right. Anyways, we got our guest.
We do.
Bill, and he is dressed to impress.
He is from Blue Line Futures. Bill, good morning. Morning. How have these markets been treating you?
You know, we've really liked this volatility. You know, getting the melt up that happened, and you know, either you felt a little under positioned and you kind of just had to be patient. But at the onset of September, a lot of technicals and just the irrational fundamentals, we got actually pretty bearish. And that worked well. And then we got bullish last week. So it's been, the markets have been nice, you know, on futures trading, futures investing, and then portfolio management, just doing a number of different sort of ways to play the market. You know, through that drop last week, just, I love software. I thought that's been a good area to you know, add on that immense weakness, and then trying to find some other spots, but as well, just, you know, playing some of the levels on the futures side too. So, It's been some really great volatility. I think it's here to stay. The one thing I'm narrative for the next month, I really want to stick by is not getting married to anything ahead of the election. And that way to really on the trading side. And that way you have opportunities that are going to present themselves afterwards.
So you're basically just trading the range until then.
That's the goal. Yeah. We started using, getting long in the NASDAQ from the trading side, last week and flatten out that position here today. We put our research each day, so it sort of tracked the bias. We got bearish with that bias to start September. We got bullish, cautiously bullish through last week. Some big resistance levels overhead in the indices. I mean, with the S&P, a little bit of a melt up last night. Didn't quite get there, but 33.79 is the close from the FOMC back mid-September. And then, you know, there's a lot of resistance up there above 30, you know, 34, 34 and a quarter. So that's just a big pocket. I think it's going to be tough to get above. And then the NASDAQ, 11,500, same sort of pocket that I think is going to be a tough one to get above. So we could see a chop around a bit there between some of the towards the lower end of the range we saw last week and here. But if we start closing out above, we could run a bit again.
So at what levels would you change your mind and turn bearish again?
If we broke lower, as we were bearish, we had downside targets. 3250 was the level in the S&P we wanted to look for, though we weren't really ready to get bullish going into that. We weren't ready to get bullish until, you know, we knew worst case scenario, we could see 3000 to 3050. But then we started seeing some of the action we liked where the NASDAQ didn't make a new low relative to the initial low. If you look in the charts, I don't want to talk about specific days, but it was like a Sunday night, Monday. Yeah. But the S&P was digging in to the 10% exactly. And some of that selling became exhausted. I think if we get weakness, I wouldn't be surprised to see 3,000. I think it'd be a tremendous buying opportunity. And that's why I want to stay flexible and always, you know, whether it's trading gold and crude oil or trading individual stocks and names, just giving myself the flexibility to, you know, put money to work outside of after the election. I think no matter who wins, the market's going to like the fact that there is now either less uncertainty or more certainty, and that's going to play favorable to the market. And I'm seeing Goldman Sachs, you know, agreeing with that, and they're putting that narrative out. So they're agreeing with me. No, I guess they're putting that out too.
Any particular names that you, putting all that aside for a minute, any particular your names that you like regardless here?
Yeah. I mean, I've used the weakness from the first names. I, you know, even added too early, maybe, you know, consider too early. Apple, Microsoft, CRM, Adobe, Intuit, Square. You know, I like Square going, you know, and these are things I'm buying with, you know, idea look going out 5 years or so. And you know, last week too, a nice surprise upgrade yesterday was Chevron. Buying Chevron and a little bit in the energy space last week. I think the fact that it's just getting so much poor attention in the news, it's attractive to me. And then you throw in the fact that you get 7% yield and on Chevron and 11% in the XLE. So, you know what? You can't argue with that right now.
Do you think those yields are safe? I mean, these dividends because these dividends, obviously, I look at ExxonMobil and you see almost 10%, you see 7% in Chevron, and you think, man, if they are safe, these are pretty solid buying opportunities. But you're still, even though you think the dividends aren't safe, you still think there's a trade here?
Yeah, I think there's good value. I mean, crude oil, specifically, I talk a lot in the futures and put a lot of information out in the futures more than I do on the equity side. But, you know, one of my narratives has been 35 is tremendous value in crude oil. And I think it's going to be a tough area to really break down below. I think everybody's worried about the negativity that could arise in the energy space, you know, barring politics, but just lockdowns, demand, 2021 outlook and where that demand's going to be. It almost seems that we need that negativity to step up in order to get $35 in crude oil, because it's not going down there without it. And so I think $35 in crude would be a really good buying opportunity. And that gets me, looking again in a portfolio sense, 5-10 years out, even just a few years out, I like a lot of, I think there's some good value in these energy names, especially the big integrated.
Bill, since you're really into the futures markets, are you looking at maybe other corners of it, like Bitcoin futures or some of the markets that we've seen huge rallies in this year?
I personally allocated to Bitcoin earlier this year and then stepped out wholly a couple weeks ago. I forget exactly when it was, but we spiked up nicely and then came back in. Gold is really where, we love gold. We've always loved gold. I mean, we got extremely bullish. One of the things I write about, and I try to at least use the phrase once or twice a week, is unequivocally bullish gold. And we've been that way since 2018, in that really immense weakness when the Chinese yuan was weakening. But I think gold has 2,300 in the first quarter of next year. 1845 was a big level. And what we'd like to do too is not just say, hey, let's buy gold, but give people, not just our clients, but in the research that we put out, a sort of roadmap to play with in what to do. And before we saw this new swing low in gold, we were loving the using and telling clients to be able to use these micro contracts. These micro contracts that the CME has used, whether it's the S&P and the NASDAQ or metals, has just been tremendous over the last several years as asset prices have ballooned higher and higher, because it gives you, you're now controlling, gold. You get a 10 ounce contract of gold. I mean, you're still controlling $19,000. So, we wouldn't buy a benchmark, maybe a $25,000 account, telling in our research and just doing it in media as well. 1910 was the first area to look to buy, and then 1855 was the second area to buy. It gives you what, an average of somewhere in 1880 area. If we broke 1790, you cut out of it. Your risk is about $3,500. And then the target to the upside is quarter one, $2,300. And you're looking at about $15,000 gain there. That's the way we like playing gold in a roadmap that somebody who's not sitting there trading it every day, somebody who's not, doesn't want to get too over leveraged. And that's a good way to measure your risk in gold. But there's a lot of ways to trade it with leverage too that we like.
Bill, any markets you would absolutely avoid right now?
Natural gas has some interesting swings. We were bowled up for a bit there. I wouldn't be surprised if natural gas was a dollar higher or back below $2, in the next few months. I mean, we haven't really seen the drawdown, but who knows what winter has to come and then some of the political side of things. It worries me a little bit, but that's actually, for me on the trading side, one of the reasons why, I'm rolling out a new entity called Blue Creek Capital. It's a CTA, commodity trading advisor. And we're bringing on an energy trader who's going to manage a portfolio in the future side, energy spreads, anything from in natural gas and crude oil. So we're really excited about that. I'd put it in his hands and not sitting there day trading on natural gas for myself.
Yeah, wild markets for sure. Bill Baruch is the president of Blue Line Futures. Bill, thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. 8:44, 8:45 almost here. We got about 15 minutes before we're going to bring on Andrew Left from Citron Research. Let's do some tickers. Make sure we got through our list, and let's go to the chat. Last one on my list was Abbott, ABT. They got the after hours pump last night from the White House. They talked up the testing kits that they're delivering, and the stock moved off that. Didn't see what it's done for the last hour or so, but it got the after hours pump yesterday.
And you know how I like to fade the after hours pump. I am short Abbott Labs just from last night, because this thing just got silly. And if you look at the after hours chart, I'm not sure why that chart's not showing it, but this got up over 108 last night. and it's still trading 106. There it is. So you can see the big pop. I got it. I didn't do as good as that 108.5 area. I was up there for a bit and I waited till it cooled off. And I saw I wanted a short on the way down and I got in the 107s. I'm still short it, going to bring it in and going to cover it here this morning. So full disclosure, this is just an overnight trade that I just thought it got overdone when it got up to the 108 area.
And that initial pop that it got back at the end of August, that was on the same news, right? And it had a ridiculous move. And
yeah, this move's been faded every time. I mean, Johnson, vaccine, you know, COVID tests, these moves continue to get faded. So that's why I'm shorted. Like I said, I'm going to cover this here this morning. I'm hoping to get it down the 105 handle, though. So trying to make a quick couple of points is because it got overdone.
All right, I want to go to the chat, the various chats, because there's a lot of tickers flying around. Here's one. I think you guys may have talked about it when I was out, but NLS Nautilus, because I have not looked at this, but I recall someone somewhere mentioning it. But holy cow, Nautilus. I mean, if you just pull up that week.
Well, this is a competitor to Peloton. I mean, really, when you think about it, it's home gym.
It's home fitness, right?
Home fitness. So it's not sexy like Peloton, but it's probably the under the radar play that has been running too, home gym system. So it was a dollar back in March and in 17. It's been an incredible run for Nautilus. Does all this, you know, fluff come out of it eventually once, you know, COVID is gone? Yeah, I think it does, but we don't know when that's going to be. Trend is still your friend, absolutely your friend, and it looks like it's trying to break out here again. I would say this probably, if you bring up the Peloton chart and you bring up the NLS chart, look how close those trade together. So if Peloton pukes, NLS will start probably puking. If Peloton breaks out, NLS will start breaking out. It's a nice little pair trade for you here. So under the radar play that has just kind of tracked Peloton pretty well.
And you know, this was a left pick too, Spencer.
Bullish pick?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
All right.
I'm on the show. Ask about that. Nice time. I didn't know that.
Yeah. 18 is the next hurdle for Nautilus NLS. That's been high. The move so far, real good support, just 16 and just under 16. But that high at 18 is your next hurdle. Nothing really to confirm that on the monthlies. That's just on the daily charts.
Everybody's talking Ecola today, and we have not talked it. I mean, this has been just an awful month for Trevor Milton.
Tomorrow is the day that matters. The deal was supposed to close tomorrow.
The GM deal.
Yep.
I mean, this has just been a disaster month for him. You think about, you know, where he was a month and a half ago doing a deal with General Motors. Not even, you know, the beginning of the month. This month started awesome with this deal with General Motors. And it's ending, you know, obviously he's been ousted basically from the company. And now he's got sexual assault charges coming at him. Two sexual assault charges, the CNBC announced last night. I mean, he has had an awful, awful start of the month. Awesome. You want to talk about this is just a terrible story all around for an individual person. And obviously, you know, this person wasn't everything that everybody thought he was. Stock NKLA has just followed this story and is down here again this morning because obviously the personal allegations against Trevor Milton here. I will say, can they turn the story around? You know, now that Trevor Milton is gone.
Yes. The answer is
there you go.
You just have to make trucks.
They need to make the electric trucks. They need to actually do what they're supposed to do and make the trucks. Can they potentially turn around? Is this the Trevor Milton bottom? You know, I don't know. The valuation's still nuts, so it's hard to just say a value investor is going to come in and say, I see value at $18. But does the story – that's the only question. Does this story have the potential to get hot again now that Trevor Milton is out of the picture? It does. It does have that potential. But am I stepping in and saying that the all-time low or whatever is in at 16, 15, and it's safe to come in here now? I can't do it. There's too many unknowns. We don't know what's happening with multiple investigations. We know by the DOJ and by, I believe it's the SEC, and an investigation as well. And we haven't had any news from those two. So again, there's just too much headline risk for me to come in here. And the same thing I said when it was $31 and it was like trying to find support at 30. I was like, there's too much headline risk. And we know, obviously, it's continued to leak since then. So I think I need closure on what those investigations look like. And if there's this much shady stuff going on in Trevor Milton's personal life, maybe there was some shady stuff going on in the company as well.
One thing you can bank on for sure, and if this company does start to turn around and this does start to rally, it's going to be a much different picture because you got people buried in this stock, overhead supply.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, it could always replicate, you know, the move that it had, but it's just going to have, you know, the first time you did it, there was nobody there, shorts were covering. This time, you just got people scratching your head. Why did I buy this at 60? Why did I buy it at 50? Why did I buy it at 40? Why did I buy it at 30? Why did I buy it at 20? So, I mean, it just, yeah. Lead on that 16-15 low, and that's about all I can say on that.
Takes that out. When stocks make new lows, it's time to go.
All right, really interesting note this morning from B of A Securities. There, Sean Kelly is making a call, several calls. He's upgrading four hotel stocks, and he is downgrading three hotel stocks.
So Paris trading. We like so Paris trading.
Here are the upgrades for you. SHO, Sunstone. PEB, that's Pebblebrook. Park Hotels, PK. And extended stay, STAY. He's upgrading those four to buy, and he's downgrading RLJ, which is RLJ Lodging, Host Hotels, which is HST, and Choice Hotels, CHH. He's downgrading those to underperform. So no neutrals. We got buys and we got sells. Making several
playing games here. He's making calls within. He's hedging himself. He's doing the COVID hedge because he's doing it all within the same industry. So
this is great. He's making calls.
Yeah. This is what we like.
Yeah.
I don't follow any of these companies on an individual basis, so I'm not going to be able to tell you which hotel is better than the other hotel. I'll just tell you I don't like any hotels until we get more clarity on the virus. And hotels are still in ground zero, so they're continuing to be in no touch for me. I mean, I read, you know, the article that you sent me, Joel, from, I believe it was Washington Post, was it, on the weekend?
Yeah.
Where, you know, you've got the virus, and it's obviously changing, and it's adapting, and it's going to be a hard vaccine. It's going to be a hard one to get. It's not just like, okay, we got it. Lots of companies working on it. They'll eventually get something. But then the argument is, okay, we got COVID right now, but okay, now it's changed a bit. And now your current vaccine isn't working and we need to chase it like the flu. And the more it changes, the more it is a coronavirus, the more struggle you'll have it. Because you get your flu shot every year. It doesn't mean you're not going to get the flu. So you could get your COVID shot every year, and it doesn't mean you're not going to get COVID. And until we get more clarity on, is this, you know, becoming like the flu in the essence that it's going to be changing and not stable. And obviously I'm not a geneticist and I can't tell you about those, you know, intricate little details there, but I just know overall they've had a lot of struggle with the flu vaccine over the years. And this is like the flu. It's going to be a struggle to get the COVID vaccine, and that's going to turn people off of hotels for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I respect this analyst and doing his homework and, you know, trying to figure out what to buy and what to sell and everything. But overall, you know, for better or for worse, I'm like, hotels are, you know, things are good. People are staying more hotel. All hotels are going up. Things are bad. You know, people are not traveling as much. All hotels are going down. So I mean, I don't know how you can make a differentiation between the ones he's talking about buying, or the ones he's talking about selling.
I mean, it probably has to do with the amount of debt they have.
Yeah.
Maybe. All that could come into play. We're not hotel analysts, though, so I'm not going to say if he's right or wrong. He's making calls within the industry, and good. Show some separation. But I'm just saying, as a blanket, I don't want to own any hotels right now.
I agree.
Maybe maybe they're cheap, but look, they're not even that cheap anymore. Like somebody just bringing up Marriott.
I know.
I mean, okay, Marriott went from 145 down to like $67, up at 96 now. So it's gotten back half the losses from the March lows, where you have a lot of, you know, other ones that we've talked about there that aren't that far off the March lows. Hilton has come significantly off. You had the Ackman Hilton bottom when he had, we know the rant on TV, and he actually specifically mentioned Hilton. That was $44. It's up at 89 now. I mean, you're 20 points off where the highs were, but you still have COVID. Why in the hell do I want to buy Hilton hotels now? And I don't think you mentioned Hilton in this. I'm just saying hotels in general. I mean, they're definitely not in as good a shape as they were in February. And is it only 20 points worse off? I think it's maybe worse off than that. So do they all come back eventually if we beat COVID? Maybe, probably. But again, it's the timeline for that. You know, how, and is there going to be more dilution before that? I don't know. I don't have the answer to these questions.
You know what? They're not going to bring back like those breakfast buffets. You know that.
Joel hates buffets. I like buffets. My parents are so disappointed. They love the buffets and they go to all these buffets. They can't go to any of these buffets because most of them aren't even allowed in Canada right now to open. I don't know how that is in Michigan, but in Ontario, they don't even allow buffets right now. So my parents are massively disappointed. But there's people that like the buffets. And are buffets eventually going to come back? I think so. I think we're going to see buffets again. But we could be a long ways away from that. I mean, we're still – people think we're in the late innings of this COVID thing, and we don't know. We don't have the answer. Are we in the eighth inning or are we in the second inning? We don't know the answer to that. And you know what works no matter what if we're in the second inning, the eighth inning? It's what Bill was just talking about. Apple, Microsoft, CRM. We know those companies work in all environments. And that's why these companies continue to get bought on the dip, because they work with or without COVID.
All right, to the chat, several people have asked us about Snapchat. It caught the upgrade yesterday from Guggenheim to buy, had a good day. It is awful as high. Actually, what happened after hours yesterday?
Fast money. What do you think happened? Oh, fast money. That's the fast money pump right there. 2640, 2650. Some days they move stocks, some days they don't. Last night, everything they talked about just ran. People had to own stocks. Maybe it was a big up day in the market and people were looking in for ideas after hours to buy. That you do see the moves really happen. They're exaggerated when fast money commentary, but you had multiple commentators saying that they liked Snapchat last night on fast money. Guy Domi, I believe, said he thinks it's going to $30. And when he said that, that's what the blast off was. So you can write on that Guy Adami pop, 2650 to 2660. Maybe Guy's going to be right. Maybe it is eventually going to $60, I think, or $30. I think he's, you know, on the right side of this trade because the stock has been hot, but it's not going to $30 right now, as Joel would say. And that's why it's pulled back here. So maybe it lifts today if the overall market lifts. It's showing a little bit of relative strength this morning, but it was ripped a lot last night on Guy Adami's comments.
Just a little confluence here in the market. You did hit 2574, or excuse me, the high was in the 26 handle, and that high was 2657. If you go back to your dailies to early July, you had a couple highs in that area, 2650 and 26, what were they, 2650 and 2676. So the big area, big area. Now you faded a buck off there. I don't know if you're going to get back up there today.
To the chat, Boeing.
Dennis?
I give thoughts on Boeing almost every day. We almost get asked about it. It has been an impressive 2-day move. Like big time, impressive move.
Yep.
145 to 166. It's a huge move. If you're buying Boeing now, you're doing it backwards because this has been the ultimate fade stock. It falls 10, 15 bucks to buy. It rallies 10, 15 bucks. It's been a sell. The overall trend is still down, unfortunately, for the last 3 months. You can clearly see the Jeff Mackey purple crayon, if Joel was able to draw it in, is indeed down. You have major resistance at 180.
Towards approval. We're creeping towards approval
of the Jeff Mackey purple crayon.
On the 737 Max, getting there.
But the problem is their customers don't need new planes. I don't know. I cannot get in on the Boeing bandwagon here from a fundamental basis long term. I will just say rips have been sold multiple times in this. That's always been a selling opportunity. I don't see why it's different this time.
Okay. Pre-market prep stock of the day on Friday I thought that it rallied on Friday because of there were some upgrades of the cruise lines. So it was kind of, back to normal trade, and it got a nice move on Friday. I did not pay attention to it the rest of the day. There was not much resistance in there. I think important for this is to get to that 170. Yeah, you see that high at once, just over 170 on earlier in the month, and then that next day you almost hit 170 on the nose. So I would hold that out. That is a target. The longer it takes to get up and take out 170, I look for it to maybe just roll over once again. And also was interesting when that news came out. I think it had a 145.01 low that day. And before it started that big rally, when it got up to 230, it had a low at 144.50. You know, when we had that June 8th high, Dennis, that you called in the airlines and everything. Yeah, yeah. Boeing peaked that day too, and that came, that move emanated from the 144.5 level.
All right, 9 o'clock. Until Andrew joins, let's do some more tickers from the chat. I've been asked about PayPal here. I hadn't looked at it for a couple weeks, but not surprised to see it doing with what the rest of the tech is doing.
It eventually probably just makes new highs again. This story is hot online. I mean, this has everything that you want in a story, and the valuation's a little extreme, but it's not as nuts as a Square. I think eventually it probably makes new highs. I'd be a buyer pullbacks on PayPal.
Okay, and I would say if you're looking for some resistance here, you know, you had to break down off that all-time high. That all-time high came in at, what, 211, 212, and you broke down to 172. That's easy, right? 40-point move, halfway back. You're halfway back here, 191.92. Important to hold this and get up and test the next daily high at 198.22. So get nice, getting back a half of the move, maybe a couple days of consolidation and make a push towards 200.
What other tickers did I see here?
Let's give you some imbalances here.
Sure, sure. We haven't done imbalances.
We haven't talked imbalances for a while. There's a few bigger ones. Johnson & Johnson's 32,000 to buy. I'm looking, and they're not like, we're not talking like a big, big day, but I'm just trying to give you a few standouts here. Sure. Coca-Cola, 85,000 to buy. You're seeing a little help in the staples here this morning. You're seeing that showing life. I mean, they're scrambling around looking for what to buy here today. And it's a nothing day, obviously, because we're flat basically on the S&P with fair value. Techs, you know, some of them are down, some of them are up. It's kind of just such a mixed day that it's hard to see any separation. The only thing I do see, I see like Target trading up a buck. Target having an okay day yesterday. We talked about on the show yesterday. So you're seeing a little bit of strength in the consumer staples. I'm trying to find other pockets of strength for you, and I really don't see them. So, and I don't see a lot of relative pockets of weakness here either. This is just a day that has no direction. The directionless day. And that makes it tricky as a trader because you'll see separation after 9:30, but we haven't seen enough separation in the pre-market to say what's going to have a good day and what's going to have a bad day.
All right, let's see here. I want to go back to the chat. There was a bunch of we're waiting for Andrew left.
Yeah,
and we'll wait a few more minutes, and then in the meantime, we'll do some tickers. Fitbit. Saw someone mention Fitbit. Joe Dagger.
Oh, what's going on there?
Looks like the Google transaction is going to go through. This is according to Reuters. Or at least it'll win EU approval. So we know that's maybe a higher bar. And looks like they're gonna. Get there. So
I've never understood how they were going to say this Fitbit antitrust issues here. I mean, you got a company as small as Fitbit. You're really concerned about Google buying something this small. I mean, if you didn't allow this one, you mean Google's, you're never going to allow them to buy anything. So I don't get it. I don't get why there was ever any antitrust issues. I mean, this got down near the low sixes multiple times with a seven. I think the bid's like 715, isn't it? Like, it's a cash bid out there for Fitbit from Google. And I think it's like 715. So I'm shocked that this has sat here for so long. And we're talking now. If we just look here. Sorry. This is what happens after 9 o'clock when I stay late. We're talking now. This is going on for a year. So I don't see why there's ever been an issue. So I think, you know, if you were sitting around here and buying this at 610, 615, I think you're being rewarded somewhat this morning. And I think it's deserved. I think eventually it does get bought out. I think eventually the deal goes.
What is the price? Did we find out the takeout price?
715. I'm going for my memory, though. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, do if we know got it? The ARB, you want to sit on the money. I don't have it in front of me. I just noticed
it. Dennis, it's in the $7, $8 range. I don't have exactly. But I do have Andrew left with us, so I'm going to bring him on here in a second. I've been hyping it up all morning. If you are a listener of our show, you know of Andrew left. He's from Citron Research, one of the most successful short sellers on the street. He is here in our Zoom. I'm unmuting him. Andrew, good morning. I know it's early. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning to you. All good.
All right. Andrew, I want to start off. We've been talking about a lot of SPACs, as is everyone else. And I know you've been watching in this space. There's been some success stories, some failures, some success stories turning to failures, as is the case of Nikola. Now you've got, I saw Playboy is going to go public via a SPAC now. What are your thoughts on like the entire SPAC trade this year?
You have to be careful. You have to see exactly what you're buying. I saw Nikola. I pretty much commented this thing in June. It was obvious. When you saw Trevor, it was so obvious he wasn't Elon. It was being pushed out. Obviously, look, the name Nikola, the plan, the word Tesla, everything about it was a copycat. It didn't make sense. It didn't pass a smell test. Now, there are other specs, obviously, that, you know, DraftKings, you know who's DraftKings, right? So you know what you're getting right there. So it's just important. If people want to play it, there's no free lunch on Wall Street. How does that sound? The free lunch is being in the SPAC before it even rolls up. Before it goes from 2 to 10 to 18, be the guy at 2. But, you know, once you're the last guy in, you have to know what you own.
So there's no SPAC that you would like right now, or you would just be
skeptical? Obviously, listen, you know, if you look at a Bill Ackman, you say, okay, I'll put something in his. Or you look at Chamath, you go, I'll put maybe something in his. I'll give it a shot. As shots, they're fine. But can you make these investments the way you would invest in an Apple, Amazon, or anything else that's trading? Absolutely not.
Right. And like, what are your thoughts on just like the trend of SPACs as a way to go public? It's sort of an end around of the traditional IPO process. Are you a fan of the process, or would you?
You know, I am actually. It's funny because you actually look at one person or one group who actually has accountability. If you look at all the dog meat IPOs that have been brought public by investment banks who have no responsibility on their name because they're so big. So yeah. I don't mind the SPAC within itself. If there's a quality company, if that's the way, if people want to invest on a jockey, I totally understand that.
Yeah. All right, Andrew, I want to get your thoughts on some stocks you're short on, some of the stocks you are long on. You're a short INO. I want to ask you about that. We talked about them yesterday because there are some news there. Still short? Nothing's changed?
Oh, a lot has changed. I mean, they pretty much now were told by the FDA that they cannot do phase two. So they're stuck in phase one. Now we're 30 years, no product. I think it's still a $2.5 billion company. It's probably worth cash. I mean, I don't know why it's worth anything more than cash. Think about it this way. They won't be able, they say that, here's the ironic part. Inokio, I call them Pinocchio instead of Inovio. And the reason was, they said they developed a vaccine in 3 hours, if you remember this company. Yet it's gonna take them a month to answer the FDA about this vaccine, right? You developed it in 3 hours, fine. So you know immediately something's wrong here. It has a lot of retail traders in it because they just lie. That's why they're Pinocchio. And Inovio should be trading once the whole trade settles out. It's a high short interest stock. There's nothing in this. By the time they respond to the FDA, get a new trial, we'll already have other vaccines. This is not even a vaccine. I don't know why we're discussing this. It's been a trade. That's all it's been. So I expect this to, I mean, it should trade cash. But short term, you should definitely trade the $6-7.
So, are you still short?
Most definitely. I mean, there's if you're going to be short one name, and who knows if Novavax or Moderna ever comes up with anything? You know, that's a tough one. But this one is just a dog.
Okay. What about GSX? You've called this one like the another Luckin' Coffee.
GSX, I can't comment on for legal reasons. GSX, as I stated before, I believe is a fraud. There's something else going on right now that I can't comment on. But I think it's not just me. If you look at things, work that Carson has put out, I mean, everyone has put out work that shows it's a fraud. How about this? If it's not a fraud, that it's a better company than Snowflake, than Google, than Facebook ever was. They said they're growing at 370% profitably. So it's either the greatest company that ever existed in the history of the world or is a fraud. The rest of the evidence supporting it, can't comment on.
Plug Power, you've called them the anti-Tesla.
Plug Power has been expensive for a while, and it remains expensive. But now people are on the hydrogen. They're just loving on it. So it is what it is. It just remains, an expensive company, and But, you know, God bless them. They've remained expensive for like 8-9 years now. So what's to say it's not going to remain expensive? I would not own the stock at all. You know, I don't know about shorting. I'm not short the stock right now. I just look at it.
Okay. We were just talking one stock that you do like a few minutes ago, Nautilus. You still in that one?
Yeah, I'm still in Nautilus, 100%. Okay. You know, gym equipment's hot and there's nothing else to be said. I mean, the stay at home, I was short Peloton earlier, completely underestimated the big stay at home trend for fitness, which is probably going to, it's solid. And they have a big suite of products. They're extremely cheap for where they are. Nautilus, you know, they own Bowflex, they own between bikes and treadmills and ellipticals and weights. They really a nice group of products, and the credit card data is on fire. So yeah.
Andrew, just real quickly, when you say you cover, is it something that you do when you see the fundamentals change, or did something you do on the price action?
With Peloton, I mean, I should have covered earlier than I did. As soon as the story, changed, and the story, you know, as soon as it became the stay at home, and you had to realize that that was a much bigger, it was a lot bigger, and you know, it's a good product. And I realized something. My biggest mistake as a short seller is shorting a good product on valuation. I think the valuation on Peloton is stupid, ridiculous, nonsensical. I think the valuation on Shopify is stupid, ridiculous, nonsensical. They're both very good products. How about Tesla? Stupid, ridiculous, nonsensical. Why short a good? Historically, if you want to make money in this market, the past 10 years, if you find a product and you like the product, you buy the stock. You do not worry about the price of the stock.
Yeah, we talk about that a lot too. Just the story matters, right? Story can sometimes...
That's the only thing that matters.
Yeah, yep. We're with you there. What about FLDM? You've been long this name. Are you still long? You've been
I caught a little bid today. Yeah. I saw this morning. I think they got expanded use coverage from the National Institute of Health. The only way we're going to get out of this whole... what we're in right now is massive testing. I still don't know why it's tough to get tests. And saliva-based testing seems to be the answer. They have the most advanced proprietary system for mass-scale saliva-based testing. I just don't know why the stock, you know, it seems to be stuck in the mud for some reason. But maybe while Inovio just moves, it's amazing. But I'll be patient. Yes, I'm there. Again, you know, whenever you trade anything that has to do with the virus, you have to be cautious on your sizing. But yes, I still own it.
And then Restoration Hardware, one you've been bullish on, catching an upgrade this morning. You said it would hit 400.
Going to 500.
Oh, you moved it now. Okay, because I was going to say.
I'm telling you right now, I say 400, you say 400, 400, 500. Yeah. They haven't even started in Europe yet. I don't know if you've ever been in the store. They hit every trend out there. The deurbanization trend, the stay-at-home trend. They one of the few companies without any real competition. If stores do open up again, they own the best real estate in the country, everywhere, in every major city. So and they're in a win-win and another win because they're about to expand. And I don't see what stops them.
And then last one I wanted to hit, you still believe that Apple could potentially buy Sonos?
Someone's going to buy Sonos. I mean, is Sonos, again, goes back to that stay at home. You know, I don't know, you know, Microsoft doesn't have anything in the home right now. Once you see like Oracle making deals for TikTok, makes you wonder who started starting to go into whose space. So if you want home speakers, connected home, home assistants, Sonos is a good, Sonos is great. And I don't know if you have, just like I said, go look at the reviews on the Sonos product. They were sold out this summer. It's a great product. If you have it, you know it. Buy the stock. That's it.
All right. That was it for my list. I'm getting a lot of questions from our chat. I don't want to keep it too much longer. Do you have any thoughts on the movie theaters, on those stocks, AMC, CNK?
So the problem with the movie theaters is obviously the business model just seems dead, right?
Yep.
But it's, you know, tomorrow, if we have a working vaccine, do I feel like standing in the way of an 80% move against me? So, you know, and the stocks are trading like they're dead. I don't show. It feels like it's a slingshot if you're wrong on it, and I don't like that.
Yeah, you're essentially risking a short squeeze. Is your risk? All right, Andrew left. You know him. You've heard him. Citron Research is his site.
Tell you an interesting stock. No one paid attention yet.
What do you got?
Yeah, it's got Compass Pathways. Have you seen it yet?
No. Give me the ticker.
CMPS. And it's really interesting. What they are the first ones who are using the psilocybin, what's in the magic mushrooms, for they have FDA approval for mental health purposes. They just went public. You know, it's one of those big concept stocks. And as you saw, like with Beyond Meats or Tesla's, the market loves a good concept stock, which is, you know, they're the only people in the space. You know, real Peter Thiel's major shareholders. You'll see it, top-notch board. And using the active ingredient, magic mushrooms, nothing else to be said, the psilocybin, to help people with depression and mental health, post-traumatic stress disorder. So it's interesting.
Are they a U.S. company or Canadian? They must be.
They're in the U.S. They're based out of London.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I don't know much about this one, but I.
They just went public.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Okay. Yeah, it's funny because that entire space has been sub-bifurcated. It's been short Canada, long U.S., but I'll have to take a look at Compass. Did not know that one before. Final thoughts here, Andrew, just on this overall market. We've been saying on our show we think just trade range-bound until after the election or after we get, you know, a winner at least in this thing. Any just macro thoughts here?
Oh, just don't get blown up. Okay. I mean, honestly, you know, just everything here, it doesn't seem like there's anything that could just destroy the market, right? It seems pretty resilient, but I really just don't see what takes it. I mean, we'll see what happens with the debate tomorrow night. If it just tonight.
Yep.
If Trump comes out as a clear winner of Trump, I think that'll have some effect on it. You know, we'll see what happens, but don't get blown up.
That's great advice for every day, every situation. Andrew Left from Citron Research. Andrew, thank you so much for the time today. I know it's early. We appreciate it.
Good to be here.
All right. That'll be a wrap. I tried to cover as many stocks as I can or as I could. I apologize.
That's great.
If I didn't get to yours, but he's out on the West Coast, so it's super early. We appreciate his time this morning. That'll be a wrap for us. You can catch a replay of this show or all of our shows on YouTube or on every major podcast platform. Thanks to our guests, Andrew Left and Bill Baruch. Thanks to all of you in our chats. If you like that interview, want to see some more likes, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. That would make me very happy.
And if you do blow up,
yeah,
then just reload and listen to Ben Zinka's Free Market Prep Show more about it. Reload.
Please remember all the information from our show is meant to be used as informational purposes, not for investing or trading advice. That'll be a wrap. Joel and I will be back at 3:40 p.m. Eastern Time on our YouTube channel. Everyone have a great rest of your day and good luck and stay safe.